jump.
Two on two on two. That bomb so far. Tink, they gotta move quick right now. They're going for it. The defuse is already happening. Hiko, are you kidding me? He's gonna go for it. They win the round. Hiko picks up a triple and Cloud9 win it. One. My hands are shaking.
He's thinking about it. Here it comes.
Man, from
Gengar's pretty close.
They're gonna dive in. It was the target. It's here. They've exhausted Uzi. Oh, on the back. They're trying to get in. But Zero's taking over. Sorry, he's gonna go down as well. Insane low. Insane goes down. Now Uzi is
done. Oh my
yes.
God. There's a god.
Are you kidding me?
Let's keep it clean. It's family show.
Oh yes. Yes, yes, yes. That amazing open and rat-a-tat-tat can mean one thing and one thing only. And that is, it's time for episode 7 of The Center Ring, your professional gaming podcast. Coming to you live, pre-recorded from an undisclosed location. One man knows where it's at, and he knows the price, as if he shares. My name is Tim. The laugh you just heard, that came from a gentleman called Brandon.
Man, I'm not going to lie. I thought this was episode 8. I was like, oh man, 2 months. Oh man, nope.
There's a very good possibility it might be 8, and I just
No. I just checked. It's okay. It's 7. You're all right. Right. You're right.
There's a very good chance I screwed that one up. But okay, so it is episode 7 of The Center Ring, TCR, whatever you want to call us. That's the name. We have an excellent show for you today. Excellent show indeed. It will be very Counter-Strike Kaluge heavy. I mean, when there's a major in one weekend, you better believe we're going to discuss it. At least when it comes to Counter-Strike. So that will be a very heavy one towards the end of the show. Of course, we will always end the show with the micro. And as we mentioned in episode 6, we do have an interview with Mr. Matt Rutledge, CEO of Mastery.gg. That is the coaching gaming platform that will soon hit the market.
Online coaching for esports, yeah.
And we had a chance to sit down with him, so we will definitely play that here midway through the episode as well. But before we get into any of that, another big event that happened was League of Legends.
I'm surprised you weren't like, oh, there was some other tournament going on or something.
Well, look, just because I don't necessarily love it doesn't mean it's not a big deal. And it is a big deal, and that would be the world going on for League of Legends. Millions and millions of people watch it, so we must discuss, and we will discuss right now. Brandon, your TCR League of Legends correspondent, Brandon, everybody. Take it away.
That's a lot of pressure. So 2015 League of Legends Worlds just happened, and absolutely zero surprise, the New England Patriots of League of Legends, SK Telecom T1, beat 2 Tigers 3-1 in the best of 5. SKT kind of dominated the entire time. They went 15-1 throughout the entire grand finals, like through group stages all the way through. They lost one game the entire time.
Not bad at all.
That is the best record anyone has ever posted. The second best record anyone ever posted was also SKT, when they went 15-3 in the very first year of LCS in 2013.
Is that a good thing, you think, when one team can dominate that hard?
I never think that's a good thing, personally. It was actually kind of ruined the stats. So one of the interesting, like the things that everybody's talking about with this is that this is the first time any team has won 2 LCS titles, Worlds titles. And I was like, oh man, that's kind of impressive. Like, it's the first time anyone's ever done it. And then I found out that LCS has been around since 2013. So this is the third year.
Well, then they're dominating.
They've won 2 out of 3.
I mean, they're...
That's pretty... Yeah, it's... I mean...
Pretty impressive record. Can't argue with that.
It's also the first time that 2 Korean teams faced off in the finals against one another.
You know, I wonder what the scene is like that in Korea, because from afar, from a distance here in the States, we always hear that, I mean, League and StarCraft and esports in general is very big in Korea. Well, I always wonder, do you think it's just the internet that we read that makes it seem like a big deal? Do you have any numbers on that?
I don't have any numbers. I talked to JD Wenzel, who's our PGN's League of Legends writer, and I kind of got his background and feelings on North America being so bad, because this was the first time during the LCS that North American teams kind of started strong. Like Cloud9 started pretty strong. I think TSM was the weakest of the bunch of the North American teams. But it's like they start strong and then they just crumble apart. And it's been like that since the beginning. And he basically said that the teams over in like China and Korea have almost like a farm system set up. Like they've got players that are just looking to move up to the next rank. So there's like all this competition and stuff. Where here, it's like there's like three or four top North American teams and it's all the same players and nobody ever really messes with them because there's nobody else admittedly trying here.
And if there is anyone trying, typically they'll just create a new team or never make a real big impact on anything.
So the North American teams are just the first article he wrote for us, he was like super pumped because the North American teams looked really good. And then the next article he wrote for us was about how bad they were.
And I remember, you can actually find that on our website, pgn.tv. And I remember seeing the one where it was like America's final chance. And then the next one, it was like American's issue. And I was like, what happened?
Yeah. So, I mean, they started out really strong and then just crumbled. And then, you know, League of Legends goes, same teams have been dominating for a while. SKT, Rollster has been really good, and Q Tigers are kind of an up and coming team. Marin, who got named the MVP for the tournament, basically said that if they were to have played anyone in the finals, they were kind of glad it was Q, because they pretty much rolled over Q through all of the like qualifying and group stages, like just kind of just dominated them. And I mean, it was really going into it, there just wasn't a whole lot of opportunity for Q Tigers to do anything. Like, it's pretty impressive how much better SKT is than everybody else. Like I said, it's like it's the Patriots. It's like they're
constantly on the top.
Yeah, they're just there winning. It's just what they do.
So now, are we expected then to see anything? Because one thing that happens in League that doesn't happen in really any other esports is an off season.
Which I mentioned it just before the show. Like if you go to the Score Esports. Not affiliated, but they have all kinds of like cool off-season trackers and stuff for League of Legends that I would love to see in Counter-Strike, or, you know, it was Counter-Strike specifically, just because there's so many team changes. Well, the biggest one that happened is Double Lift was acquired by TSM, which he went from CLG to TSM, so he was moving North American teams, but apparently that's a pretty big deal. I can't explain why. We do have Justin is writing an article about it.
So read Justin's article.
Check Justin's article out on PGN.TV. He will give you the lowdown on why it's important.
Because that is where you're going to find that. And I do find it interesting that there's an actual offseason. I feel like that's, again, part of the thing that, because Riot is really the umbrella corporation of League, that they can have an actual offseason to dictate when one season begins and one will end, as opposed to Counter-Strike or any other esport for that matter that just kind of lives off of tournament to tournament to tournament.
Yeah, it's that whole conversation where, I mean, you have Riot, but Riot controls the game and the tournament, you know, all this stuff, but they also can do things like tell teams no more G2A sponsors.
Well, that's the thing too, because I mean, and I think it just proves that it's the vocal minority that gets heard the most, because on the League subreddit, on, you know, esports subreddit, really anywhere on the internet that mentions professional League of Legends, Riot is, you know, the enemy. They are in everybody's crosshair as far as they are here to destroy this game that so many people love. And I feel like maybe that's actually a good thing that people are feeling that way, because how many people do you feel just love the NFL's front office, or, you know, Gary Bettman in hockey. They don't really have friends as far as being the head honcho commissioner, or quote unquote being the man that right, is here to put everyone down.
They've got to make the tough decisions to keep everything running. And I mean, if you look at like the tournaments, if you look at the Worlds,
they're not
doing a bad thing. Like, they filled up the Mercedes Arena in Berlin, filled the whole damn thing up.
Right. So I don't think for the vocal minority that is saying league is on the downward spiral because, you know, they're adding something in the game as far as cosmetics or whatever have you that you don't like Riot for. I mean, BBC just announced that they're hosting league on over there in the UK.
BBC
so,
3, I think they said it was.
Right. So I don't think League of Legends is going anywhere. And this is just another way to prove that.
And they also do something in League of Legends that I really love, and that on the stage that the players are playing on, it's not in Counter-Strike, you know, you've got the two rows that are facing the crowd, so you can kind of see the player's face, I guess. The League of Legends, what they do is they actually have the players facing each other in kind of like half circles, and then kind of cameras that can go around in the middle and stuff. And I feel like that's much better. It looks more competitive when they're facing each other, and, you know.
Are now the players... Because I have seen in certain Counter-Strike tournaments where the players are in the middle of the arena.
Which that's kind
of
what it's set up
which
like,
Which I feel
yeah.
like if esports ever become a thing where an arena trying to fill an arena becomes the standard, I feel like that's going to be the way to go. I don't feel like the one perspective of sitting in front of the screens.
Yeah, I agree completely.
I feel like it's going to be something that's more intimate and surrounding the players.
Yeah.
Is how it's going to go.
And that's what the LCS does. And the stages they put out are really, really good. And I mean, it looks fun. There's no other way to describe it. It looks like a really good experience. And I wish we would kind of take some of that and bring it over to Counter-Strike. But don't tell anybody that I said that, because Riot's bad, horrible.
Yes, we don't agree with anything that they do here.
Nope.
So there you go. Some League of Legends talk here on TCR. A very rare appearance of it. But hey, when the worlds happen, I guess we need to discuss it so the fanboys listen to the show at least once. Once around the block, and, you know, maybe during the off season we'll pay more attention to it and start it up with, you know, what, season 4 of LCS.
Yeah, season 4
of LCS. You know, maybe we can make that a mission for ourselves.
There we go.
Speaking of, though, if you are on the blocks to maybe try and get into the LCS, or you ever wondered, gee, what is holding me back from becoming that next level league player, Counter-Strike player, or anything like that, we actually have the answer for you. Because we actually sat down with Matt Rutledge of Mastery.gg to discuss that. So without further ado, let's play this quick little interview here with him. And we'll be right back here, because we actually recorded this earlier in the week. Because, you know, we're not actually live or anything. So we're sitting down with Matt Rutledge, CEO for Mastery.gg. We previously mentioned that on two episodes or so ago. It's basically a website. You mentioned it, Brandon, in the micro. It's a website that is for esports coaching. And I highly, highly praised it. I thought it was a genius idea.
If we've got anyone that can explain what it is, it's this guy, CEO right here.
Yeah,
Matt,
so we were like, why question it? And let's get the source on. So Matt, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on to clear the air a little bit. I'm also a fan of your guys' show. I found out about you guys through the esports subreddit. So shout out to our esports.
There we go.
I'm looking forward to your guys' continued success here.
Awesome. Well, hey, yeah, thank you. Thank you there. And yes, we are also a presence on the esports subreddit. So before you bash us on there, just know we'll see it. So I guess I kind of set you up there, but I guess from your own words, I mean, you are the CEO of Mastery. Is it Mastery or Mastery.gg? What's the actual name of the company?
The actual name is Mastery.gg, but we go by Mastery also. And essentially what we do is we are a video game coaching platform. So we actually build software specifically designed for esports coaching, and then we work with some of the best pro players and coaches in esports right now to offer coaching services to gamers across the world. So the three services that we have right now are, first, advanced courses, like a Udemy-style format, so coaches can kind of go in-depth into the material of their game. We also have private lessons. So a gamer can schedule a one-on-one session with the coach of their choice, or they can also take a team lesson and have the coach evaluate the entire team. And then we've also built incredible software for game tape review. So we make it as easy as submitting a YouTube clip of your play to get professional feedback from some of the best players in the world.
And that's what caught my attention was the video kind of replay there of your, I guess, of anybody's play there. That do they need a recording software for that, or is that what you're offering, kind of like a system where it records their play and then you send it to them? How is that going to work out?
Right, right. So we exist to make the coaches' lives a lot easier, right? So we take everything out of the picture so that coaches can focus on what they do best, which is actually providing that feedback to the students. So our game tape review app is essentially a gamer submits a YouTube clip, right? And that gets received by the coach. They can then watch that video when we record their feedback, the commentary, as they're watching it. And then we also have the capability to allow them to annotate on the video, draw diagrams, pictures of what they think the gamer should be doing in this scenario. They can pause, go back. So if you submit like a full gameplay of one entire game, they can go back to the very beginning. They can point out some things that happened here that maybe you ought to have done differently and relate that to the big picture of what happened in the entire game.
So is the feedback that the players get, is that coming back to them through YouTube, or is it going to be kind of delivered, you know, privately to give them kind of, you know, time to digest it and kind of understand what was being said and all that, or?
Yeah. So we return the entire package back to the gamers through our website. So this is proprietary software that we're building. So essentially what happens is as the gamer plays the game tape with review on it, they're going to be able to see exactly what the coach was doing when they were doing it. So the diagrams will appear just as the coach was putting it on the video and like that. So we return the entire package back to the gamers along with different notes. So a coach can also kind of take notes on the side, and those will be kind of training notes for the gamer as well.
So it does sound a little bit more in depth than just telling the players to get headshots like I formerly had thought. It sounds really in depth, like you really thought this through to make it more of just, you know, it's not just a coach, but it's someone who's analyzing, if that's a word, all of the players' kind of play and play style there. Now, as far as these coaches go, we have a little media kit that you sent us there, since the website's not 100% up. I saw that it was still accepting betas. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, we're about to launch advanced courses, and then we'll be launching private lessons in game review next month.
So is there any sort of criteria that a coach needs to meet before he can be classified as a coach under your company, or how does that work? Because I see really that it's a service not only for players who are wanting to get coached, but I see also a lot of your focus is coaches who want to kind of get experience in that role.
Yeah, and that's a really good question, because being selective is really important for us as a platform, because we want to be able to ensure to gamers that they're going to get something that's very high quality, right? So when a gamer makes the decision to invest in their own gameplay, in their own playing style, they need to know that they're going to be rewarded with a high-quality coaching session, regardless of what it is. So we've been very selective, especially in the early stages, with who we let come on our platform as a coach. And I'm really excited to say that we're actually going to be working with some current and former LCS head coaches and professional players. And so that's kind of the caliber that gamers can expect. And that's all because we want to be able to guarantee a quality service. And we've also brought on some sports psychologists to work with our coaches to ensure that they're not only gamers that have superior game knowledge, but that they're good communicators as well.
So you have gotten then feedback, because this was, you kind of led up into my next question, feedback from pros and everything. They're kind of getting behind this now, because I think as a normal gamer, we don't ever think that we need to be coached. It's just kind of play more. But as a professional, I mean, it's not uncommon now where teams have coaches and everything like that. So you have gotten some feedback from them?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, one of the exciting things is that because we're just now building this and releasing it, we're going to be working hand in hand with some of those coaches that I mentioned to kind of co-develop the software. So we're able to actually design it based on their specific needs. And who better to do that with than the best coaches in the world, right? But you did mention another point, which is, you know, why would someone really want to make this investment, right? Or you mentioned something along those lines. But I want to get you to think about this a little differently. And this goes back to the first mention that you said that it's kind of, oh, I don't know, maybe not the best use of money. But I want to get you to think about it a little differently, in that what's the cost of not having a lesson, right? Let's say that you take one of the higher-end lessons on our platform, right? Let's say $50. So that one coaching session, you're going to get not just the training session for an hour long, right? You're also going to get a game plan for you to train going forward to meet your goal. And if that saves you a week of gameplay of just going through and grinding it out on your own, then that saves you, what, like 20 hours
That's a great point. You just mentioned briefly there, you know, you said kind of a high-end lesson, say, was $50. I mean, is that kind of like the pricing table that you're looking at setting for the high-end lessons, or is it going to be set by the pros and coaches?
Yeah, so it will be set by the coaches. We don't want to dabble in that. We want to let them do whatever it is that they want to do as far as a price perspective. But we do want to ensure that it's a quality of service that gamers are interested in paying for, right? So that's kind of where we are on that issue.
And jumping back a question ago, you mentioned that you guys had already kind of worked with LCS coaches and players. Is that the game you guys are planning on launching with, or are you guys going to expand pretty quickly into the other top esports?
Yeah, so I think it's kind of natural that we've kind of focused on League a little bit early on, just because that's one of the most developed esports. But we are going to be open to more games. So we really want to start with the coaches themselves and then launch those games as we find quality coaches. So we don't want to jump into, you know, say, Hearthstone without a very high-quality Hearthstone coach. So we're kind of opening up new games as we get coaches.
So when we're looking here, and you don't have to get too far in-depth on this question if you don't want to, but as far as, because I'm curious here, when you started this, when you had the little baby idea of starting this company, you know, was it just you starting it? And if so, I mean, what was the discussion of target market? Are we looking at the players that are completely new? Like, let's say me, like, I don't play League really at all. Would it be something that I could get into and they would start me from the ground up? Or are we looking at those players that are kind of on the cusp of taking it to competitive play and wanting to take it to their local tournaments and just trying to get that edge?
Yeah. So I'll answer that a couple different ways. First of all, because of the quality of coaches that we have, really anyone that's a gamer is going to be able to benefit from taking private coaching with them. But with that in mind, we don't want to have such advanced feedback that it goes over gamers' heads. So we also have some people that are creating beginner's courses, right, focused on kind of the mid-tiers, the lower tiers, to grow you up from the ground up. But also, we've kind of come to find that the gamers that are using this, some of them are new players, but then some are just people that play the game a lot, and they're interested in taking lessons because they do it quite often, and they're finding that, you know, if you do something quite often, you want to do it well.
So it almost, I mean, after talking with you and everything here and getting more thoughts of it from the source here, it almost sounds like guitar lessons where, yeah, you can start at any age really to do this and start building up from, you know, learning blocks that you already have in place, but then these actual professional players, I mean, these guys have resumes of their own, can kind of step in and help you out through that push. Now, is this, for now, it seems like it's more because we just keep saying player. Is there talks of maybe having coaches assigned to full-on teams, or can there be multiple players in one session, or is that really up to the coach there?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's actually part of the bigger mission that we have. We don't just want to be the go-to place for personal coaching or the best platform to kind of develop your own individual style. We want to take this a step further, too, and be a catalyst for evolving and expanding the role of coaching in esports altogether. So esports is one of those very unique situations where you can kind of interact with the players themselves, right? Like, you can't go and shoot jump shots with Kobe Bryant, but you can go and watch a stream and watch some of the top players play. So here we want to be able to make those players accessible. And what that means is that anyone that has either a casual team that you play with just on the weekends, or if you're semi-professional, semi-competitive, you can now have access to an arsenal of remote coaching staff that you can access on demand as you wish.
Yeah, so we talked a lot about the pros and players, and you're kind of breaking into the team aspect. On your media kit, you've also got a little section for broadcasters. Like, what can somebody wanting to get into, or that is into casting, kind of benefit from your business?
Absolutely, and this is actually really exciting. We haven't really talked about our advanced courses quite yet, but this is something that we really believe that is going to be a staple for broadcasters 6 months from now. So essentially what we've done is we've created this platform that lets broadcasters create an advanced course on the game that they play. And then they're able to actually put that into their profile and use that as a way to connect with fans. So fans can support their favorite stream by, you know, taking a course with their favorite streamer and learn to play like them. So we really believe that this is going to be important. It's like one of the few ways that gamers can support a stream and get something tangible in return.
So where then can we see mastery.gg next then? Because I actually saw on the Twitter that you went to TwitchCon. So is that where everything's kind of based out there near in California?
Yeah. So this is an in-house project for Village 88, which is an investment firm and tech incubator in Silicon Valley. Our headquarters for Mastery are actually in San Francisco. So we are California-based, but, you know, our coaches are going to be all around the world and speak multiple different languages. So we're in California and on the West Coast, but we're also worldwide.
Is there any talks then of how big you want to start? I mean, or should we see Mastery.gg advertising soon at, say, I mean, DreamHack Collusion is going on here. Then you have San Jose. Will you be at San Jose?
I'll personally be there, absolutely. But one thing that we don't want to do is just kind of throw money out there and just, you know, we'd rather have advertising that's more tangible and unique to us. So we're kind of partnering with our coaches, you know, letting our coaches, empowering them to build their own personal brands through Mastery. And then we'll also have some type of affiliate advertising. So you might see us a little bit, but we just don't want to be one of those brands that just throws money out there. And we really want this to be a startup and an investment that's good for the esports as an industry, not just like a quick way to make money.
What are the chances that you're going to DreamHack Austin, since we learned that you are from Texas?
That's right. And I actually have family in Austin, so there's a pretty high chance for that.
Well, if you end up going there, we will actually be there as well. So there's a small clan of us eventually. Now it's all piling up.
Yeah, it's getting bigger for some reason.
Everybody wants to go now. So if you're at DreamHack Austin, I mean, we follow you on Twitter and everything there, so we'll definitely know, and I mean, we'll have to get together and see kind of where Mastery is at right now, you know, compared to now.
Yeah, I'd love to meet up, guys. That sounds awesome.
Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us? I mean, the website's mastery.gg. You can go there right now, sign up. I believe it says sign up for a beta. So what exactly is a beta for this type of company? What can, if someone is interested in there, what can they expect from that?
Yes, that's right. We are launching technically a beta, but we're really fortunate to have a great engineering team. So our beta is pretty much going to be a fully functional app. We'll be launching advanced courses next week, or I guess the current week once this airs. And then in mid-November to late November, we'll be launching our private lessons and GameKeeper view. So where we are right now as a company is we're working with coaches right now to get them on board and plugged in. So if there's anyone interested in becoming a coach, just go to mastery.gg/coach. You can sign up there. And then also gamers can, of course, register at mastery.gg. And by the time this airs, you'll probably already have access.
Well, there goes my whole little parting bit telling everybody to go to the website.
Well, you can't say it enough. The website is mastery.gg. Go there. It's very, very slick. Did you design this?
I did.
It's very, very professional looking. I was, honestly, two episodes ago when I poo-pooed the idea, now I feel like, okay, someone actually did put in the thought for this.
Yeah. Well, I honestly don't blame you, and I think a lot of people probably have that same perspective. But one of the things that we're kind of focusing on is, you know, if we build a beautiful product and innovative software, then we're going to kind of stir up interest in this area.
Exactly. I mean, part of products is making people want to do it, like making them realize that they're missing out on something.
And you're already doing your job. You got a couple of us already interested in looking at it. So
you've turned me, Matt. Well, Matt, thank you so much again for taking the time out of your day to do this. Again, the website's mastery.gg. Matt, thank you so much, and we will talk to you later. Okay, man?
Yes. Thank you, guys. All right.
And there he is, ladies and gentlemen, Matt Rutledge, CEO of Mastery.gg. So what did you take away from that interview?
I really like that he's giving, especially players and coaches and casters, like another revenue stream to make a living off of this. Because, I mean, like, these people are putting in a lot of time. And you know, we talk about it all the time about working for free in esports. Like, these people have done it for a long time. And I think, you know, they deserve to get paid. So, like, if they can help people get better at the game and make some money doing it, that's awesome.
I agree. And I'm also very impressed with the way he was able to change my opinion just in the matter of 15 minutes of talking to him. It could have been that he just really came out with sound opinions and sounded like he knew what he was talking about. But I was definitely the one when you pitched it, you know, a couple episodes ago. I mean, immediately the first thing that came to my head was, this will fail. Like, what could you possibly, how can you coach someone that's not part of the team? How do you just, you know, be a single private lessons in esports? But the way he described it with, you know, the system of showing you your own replays and kind of going over films with you. And I guess it sounds more like at least his expectation of what a coach should be is a lot more hands-on than what I thought in my head. And he was able to convince me. So, I mean, really, I wish nothing but the best to him.
I guess if I ever have a desire to actually try and be pro at a game ever again, I'll sign up on mastery.gg.
It will happen. Once we, once this show makes us millions, we can have the time to invest. No, yeah. So please go check him out. The website's mastery.gg. It may be up by the time you're actually listening to this, to where you can check out some more things.
Yeah, he did say it was coming up this fall. So
there you go. Check that out for all your esports coaching needs, or if you are interested in being a coach, I suppose, you could also check it out there. Speaking of esports coaches, I don't really have a segue, actually. We're just going to go talk about Counter-Strike Kluge. I really didn't. I can think of a clever segue into the next topic. I don't know. We're going to talk about Counter-Strike Kluge right now, because that just happened over the weekend. And, of course, major things happened there. Lots of upsets. We kind of previewed it most of our show last week, even. Do you have your predictions in front of you? I don't in front of me. I could go get them, but
I do have my predictions. And they were awful. Absolutely awful. I apparently have no idea what I'm talking about. The worst call I made the entire time was that Flipside was going to make it out of Group B. And they got eliminated by Mouse Sports after two matches. So
yeah, they definitely got last place.
Bro. Yeah, that was rough.
I went and grabbed my predictions. I had, who did I have? Well, let's start with here. We'll just go in the same order that we did for the preview. Group A, I had Fnatic and Cloud9 getting out of there. Keep in mind, though, if you go back and listen to episode 6, I'm pretty sure I said the disclaimer that the only reason I keep saying Cloud9 is going to do anything is because I'm a fanboy.
You definitely said Luminosity was going to be your upset sleeper pick.
Yes.
And I also had Fnatic and Cloud9, so.
Yes, and I definitely gave Luminosity the credit they deserved. And it just makes me look like a genius because Luminosity did come out of Group A first place. They ended up beating Fnatic and Cloud9. Who saw that coming? Apparently I did, so I'm a genius.
I don't even think any of the analysts there at the major knew that was going to happen. Like, everybody was pretty much like, oh, the first game was kind of a fluke, best of one, you know, it happens. There's right. No way. Yeah. Luminosity showed up.
If anything, what Kluge really showed is the fickle beast that the best of one really is. Because I feel like a lot of teams, well, maybe not a lot, but there's a good few teams that won some matches because it was best of one and it landed on a map that worked for them. But I guess that's the point of the system, right? Is,
well, you know,
if you can show up on that one match, you don't have to dominate Fnatic. You don't have to break their code and figure them out. You have to beat one match against them. So you don't.
Which the one that Luminosity took against Fnatic, they took 16-13. So it was a very close match. That, yeah, if you were to go ahead and say, like, let's go best of three on that, not sure that might happen again.
Right. And so that's why you just got to show up that one match and, you know, Cinderella stories, right? That's how it happens. Group B, I had TSM and Mouse Sports getting out of there.
I had TSM and Flipside. That was the bad call.
So neither of us gave G2 the respect that they apparently demanded from this tournament. I will get into G2's unreal tournament here in a second. But my God, they made a lot of people look stupid. I don't care what. No one thought they were, G2 was going to do they did.
Yeah, and if you go to the Global Offensive subreddit, I told you I did this. I searched for like the top plays from the tournament. G2 was like 50% of those plays. Like, they had so many 3v1s and like 1v4 where 1v5s, it's one person even. just clutched it, just absolutely rolled over an entire team.
And it was different people each time. You had Rain, you had Fox, you had, you know, Jay Kem. All of them showed up. It was unreal. And I will definitely, I want to dive into that a little bit more when we get into the actual bracket play. Did you have something to say?
Well, I was going to save it, but I think I need a G2 shirt now because they've got a sweet logo.
Right, they do have,
and they're pretty good.
They have a boss logo, and I'm going to give credit to that logo. At least 40% of the results from Kluge happened because of that new logo.
Direct result.
At least 40% of what they accomplished was because of that logo. It is pretty awesome. Group C, my predictions. I actually had Virtus Pro coming out. That was the group of death that had the Virtus Pro, Nip, Titan, and Liquid. I had Virtus Pro coming out and Nip. Those are my two picks.
Which I had VP and Titan. I told you guys I was fully on the Titan hype train, and it crashed.
And I even told you, we discussed this in our Clutch or Kick. It was the very last one of our brand new segment called Clutch or Kick. If Titan did not make it, my theory was, if they didn't make it out into the top six, or the top eight, rather, you know, you pick one. I mean, that's basically, if they didn't make it out of group.
Top eight is out of group, yeah.
If they didn't make it out of group, so let's say top eight, would this be considered a failed experiment to bring Scream back into the team? Is it too early to call that? It might be too early to call whether the whole thing of bringing Scream back is full-blown. I think it's a little too early to say that, but it's definitely not too early to say they're probably freaking out right now.
They better be freaking out. I mean, they beat Nip in their first game, right? Then they lost to VP, which, I mean, that's not a bad team to lose to.
No, I mean, you're going to lose to VP. That's fine.
But then you lost a best of three to Nip 2-0. And it's like, this isn't the same Nip Ninjas in Pajamas that it was, you know, five tournaments ago.
According to you, it is not the same Nip.
You're the only one that's still behind that team 110%.
I will always support Nip.
This isn't the same team, and they are not nearly as consistent as they used to be. But they eliminated Titan like it was nothing.
Now, your prediction was Titan was going to
top four.
Top four?
So they were going to win one more game after the groups, which didn't happen at all.
Do we feel a little silly? We should have done a bet. I should have always do a bet when picking brackets. Because, yeah, I think right now, I mean...
Sorry, is Titan a kick now? Scream, Titan, Clutch or Kick?
I'm still going to say Clutch because I think that they need... I want to see what happens. I think it's too early to call it a complete fail, but it's not early enough to say they need to do something to make that hype worth it. I'm not saying that they are a top five team with Scream, because I don't think Titan is a top five team with Scream. I'm saying you paid 150, you know,
thousand pounds.
Yeah, yep. Whatever it was. It was 150,000 US dollars and whatever that is.
Okay.
Is that what it, I don't know.
They paid
a lot of money for one player to join their team to make a difference. Bottom line is, it didn't make a difference because they did not get out of group again. They have yet to make it out of group at a major. So, yes, I think you can start. Yes, it's one tournament since Scream joined, but
it's one tournament. They've had plenty of matches. They have played together. All of those people have played together a lot. You would think they could, you know, mesh a little better than what they did.
I completely agree. So we'll just have to keep a close eye on Titan. I don't think anything's going to move roster-wise, but still, just for the sake of discussion of what went on behind closed doors between management and everything, it could not have been a happy discussion. Moving on to the final group here, Group D, with Envious, Na'Vi, CLG, and Dignitas finishing in that order.
Hey, look.
I think we both nailed that one,
right? I got one right.
Yeah. Envious and Na'Vi.
Yeah.
Which, yes, I said Envious and Na'Vi were going to get out of this group just because CLG and Dignitas aren't really anything to be afraid of. But I was not expecting those two to make it all the way to the final.
Yeah, that was the second time they played each other in the tournament, too, because they played in the best of one on round two.
Well, and that's how the tournament's designed is, yeah. You play them in group and you can't play them again until final. So that actually came full circle on the rules, but...
I do want to talk about Dignitas for a second.
They make a lot of roster moves lately, so...
I feel really bad for AZ. I think that's how you pronounce his name. The guy's really good. Like, I was checking the stats on day three, and, like, he was still... They got eliminated on day one, and by day three, he was still top on, like, success in opening kills. The guy had 80% of opening kills in a round. Like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, now Dignitas has an issue with really bad timing of roster changes. They always decide to do it like a week or two before an actual tournament for whatever reason. So, I mean, I guess we'll say let's see what happens next time, but that's what we said last tournament, and they made another roster move right beforehand, so...
Yeah, he needs a little bit more support than what he's got. He's a pretty good player, and I feel like he's kind of being wasted right now on Dignitas, but I would also be lying if I said he's the only player that's not being wasted on a questionable team at this point, so...
Yeah, exactly. And moving on from groups... Where we do have to mention, not a single North American team made it out. Three of them entered, zero of them left. They stayed in groups. What happened? What do we have to do to make it out of groups? As I'm not even talking about Liquid fanboys or Cloud9 or, you know...
It's actually a pretty interesting discussion when you
look America.
When you look at the brackets, right? So CLG was arguably, I mean, match wise, the best North American team at Cluj.
Yeah, I mean, they all basically ended in the same spot. You had, if you look at like Cloud9 made 9th, and I think CLG made 11th place, but they all ended with the same prize money, so they ended in the same spot.
Team Liquid took VP to overtime in the first game, and I got really pumped. I was like, oh man, Liquid has shown up. And then
I remember you texted me and I texted you back saying, don't get
and
too
then
excited.
They go to play NIP, and it's like they all decided, like, I don't know if it's like people are I guess they all think like you, they're all afraid of NIP,
as they should be.
But it's like all of the teamwork and entry frags and everything that you're supposed to do and that they did against VP to take them to overtime just stopped happening altogether. Hiko was awful against NIP. And he said so himself, like he was like disappointed in his play, but he was just downright horrible.
And you know, I'm going to bring this up with Hiko to introduce this one. A lot of the pros, a lot of the players here, they were really complaining about the equipment that was provided by DreamHack. They were saying the monitors were awful, which is not the first time that this set of monitors
ESO monitors.
It's not the first time that those have been kind of bashed, but hey, look, whoever's going to pay them more money, I'm sure is going to get the sponsorship for monitors. A lot of players say that their computers weren't able to... I read articles, and I forget which player it was, but he said that his frames dropped to 70 frames a second.
That was Hiko on Twitter responded to a follower and said that while he was playing, like, his frames would drop to 70 frames a second.
That's awful. And when I was reading all the tweets and everything on Reddit saying that, man, these computers are not being able, for whatever reason, to handle everything.
Well,
to me, I was like, okay, well, what is not handling it well? Because some of these pros, like, their standards are like 400 FPS. But when he said 70 FPS, I was like, okay, that's noticeable.
I mean, there was, and this is like, because we can watch the games in Counter-Strike as like a spectator, there's screenshots of like player chat in-game talking about how awful the computers are to each other. Like the pros talking.
I have to see this.
I've got one right now. It's like JW was talking about the PCs lagging. Fallen and Cold Zero was also saying the same thing. And it's like they in Pronax is like every he says like mini lags now and then. So it's like they would just start stuttering in random portions. And people saw this while they were watching the game.
Through GoTV.
And I mean, it was like,
again, it's another. I don't understand how these tournaments, every time there seems to be something like that. And I can't imagine, I mean, yeah, you need a nice PC, but sponsorships and how much money these tournaments make.
Yeah, it's...
How do you not provide... That's basic. The monitor issue, look, that's a sponsorship deal. They paid a lot of money to have their sponsorships be the main sponsorship.
Right.
That happens. But for computers not to be able to run these games, well, where it's not like Counter-Strike is a, especially with some of the settings that the pros play on, which is like a lot of them play on low settings.
Right. And they play with like
graphically, you know, demanding
6:9 aspect ratio. And
so that's another thing where Shroud on Cloud9 and Hiko on Liquid, they both play on native resolutions, which is 1080p. You know, they play on wide monitors, BenQ monitors, like myself. And they both had to lower their resolution because they said these PCs cannot handle full-on resolution.
Yeah, maybe that was why he was struggling so bad in that second game.
And that's what they say.
Which, in of itself, the analysts and casters talked about it, and it's like every time the North America, they were talking specifically about Cloud9, and every time Cloud9 gets eliminated, there's always a reason.
Always something. And that's what my point is yes, you know, in football, you can say, well, the field was soft. I wasn't, you know, the field was too soft. That's why I couldn't run. Blah, blah. You're still a professional Counter-Strike player. You should still know the basics of how to adjust if things aren't perfect. And what I saw from Cloud9 was anything but. And this is going to be my rant here on Cloud9. And I hate to be this, you know, armchair gamer, you know, backseat gamer, whatever you want to call it, where there. So after it was actually during which match was it? G2 and Envious. During their match, Shroud tweeted out a picture of him and Freakazoid testing out some booth at DreamHack's virtual headset.
Oh, the HTC headset.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. So I saw the same tweet.
They were tweeting out HTC's headset, and they were messing around with it at their booth and having fun and playing around. The first thing that came to my head was, there's an epic triple overtime going on right now in the venue that you are at with your competition playing at their max capability. Why aren't you watching that? Yeah. Why aren't you there as a team with your coach taking notes or whatever? I mean, just watch.
You know what? When I saw that tweet, the first thing I thought was, I wonder who's going to raise a stink over them not paying attention. That's immediately what I thought of.
And that's what I thought. So I looked to see, I clicked on the comments to see if I was the only one being this unrational, and I wasn't. There were a lot of people saying,
okay,
what are you doing?
Well, yeah.
Like, hey, did you not realize that you failed to get out of groups again for like the 100th time you have failed to do anything relevant in Counter-Strike? Like, how can you still you're the best North American team. Great. That's like saying you're the 10th best in the world. So
it's that best North American team is questionable at this point.
Okay. Yeah. And but that's
which
not,
is even worse.
I was going to say, that's not
saying
much.
Yeah, it's even worse.
That's not making any situation better there. And so that's what I'm saying. So it's like, so before, my issue was I felt like North American teams struggle in LANs because of the traveling issue. They're always the teams to get. But then here's LG, who's from Brazil, dominating and overperforming. So they ruined that theory. I think North American teams don't prepare.
I think they're just entitled. Like,
I don't think they prepare the way other teams do.
Well, if you look at like online matches leading up to the major, the only team you really saw like putting in a lot of time in online matches was Team Liquid. I mean, not that it showed up for anything, but can see a bunch of Cloud9 matches or CLG matches. CLG played a few, I think.
But I just don't think it's the little things, right? And even if it's not that big a deal, like I said, I'm being more of a Monday morning, you know, gamer here, where it's easy for me to say, hey, don't go have fun after you just got destroyed in groups. Go and think of what you've done. And, you know, stick your nose in the corner until you're ready to come back and prepare for San Jose. You know, posting pictures on Twitter, if I was the manager of Cloud9, I think I would sit down and be like, hey, why don't we go and watch the competition? Why don't we go see what they do?
That's logical.
That is the logical way. Now, I know their owner of Cloud9 did tweet out either right after or during the tournament that he is looking for a gaming house for their league team and Counter-Strike team.
That's an investment opportunity for anybody out there looking to sponsor a team.
Right. So that might help where, you know, obviously, like I said, if everybody on the team is living under the same roof, you would think that would basically just be 24/7 preparation.
It might make the team blow up too.
It could. I mean, living under the same roof, yeah. And I could see where that happens, where you're like, wow, I did not realize this guy was such an ass.
Yeah.
But, you know, so there's that. There was one other point I wanted to make, though, with Cloud9, and it's escaping. I'll probably remember it here in a second. But moving on from Cloud9, basically doing the exact opposite of what, you know, basically being what I hoped Cloud9 was going to be in this tournament and kind of prove everything here, was G2. Unreal, unexpected, at least by me and you and anyone I talked to, was not expecting G2 to make it to the semifinals.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like G2 beat Mouse in their group stage to advance, and they beat them 2-1. And Mouse Sports is not a bad team. They're not like an exceptionally great team. Nico is playing really well, but G2 advanced. And I remember we were talking on Messenger when G2 was playing VP, and like, I just said, like, I can't believe G2 just did that to Virtus Pro.
I was texting all of my friends that I knew were watching. And I mean, I was even doing this during group when GT was making its way through group stage. I was like, wow, I can't believe G2 beat Mouse there. I mean, I had Mouse performing a lot better than I thought they were. They really did not step up this tournament in my eyes. And G2 definitely took advantage of it, because I was blown away that they beat VP, like you said. And everyone I text about four different buddies, and they all said,
like, not just
they're playing with house money.
They didn't just beat VP. I mean, they 2-0'd VP right out of the tournament.
On their good map, I actually have audio here from Jay Kim, who, by the way, MVP of that match, and possibly the tournament, if you're looking at just a wow performance as far as not expected player. Jay Kim ended up going as far as both maps in total. They ended up winning 16-10 on cash, and then 19-17 because it went into overtime on train, which was VP's pick, by the way. A lot of people criticized G2 for not vetoing train, because Virtus Pro has been dominating every team on it basically since it hit the rotation of maps. So I have audio here where Jay Kim discussed kind of what their plan of thought was on why they vetoed Cobble. And so here's that audio.
We did veto Cobble because we never play it. That's the reason. We practice every other map than Cobble. So that was kind of easy. We have practiced train a lot, and we feel great on it. But we knew that if we were going to win, we need to win the first and the third. But we actually managed to win and train. So it's an upset, really big.
So there you go. That's kind of their explanation is, yeah, VP might be good on train, but we feel like so are we, and at least they know where their strengths and weaknesses are, right? I felt like they made a very smart move with their veto, to where they were like, let's not veto in fear of the other team. Let's veto on what we know we're weak at, you know, where it's most teams, they will. They'll use the strategy of let's veto, you know, train because VP is just dominating teams. But they were fully aware that they were, obviously, he said, they never practiced Cobble, so let's veto that. Let's not even get that opportunity.
It was a smart play. And I mean, like I said earlier, it's just, there's just so many plays where you would have counted G2 out, especially, like, I mean, they're not slouches, but you wouldn't think you would see Makaleli go through and get a 4K to clutch around against VP, but it happened. Consistently.
And that even bled through the semifinals. But here with VP, real quick, Jay Kim finished both. He finished the match, you know, the 2-0 everything here, two maps, with a 62-40 kill to death ratio. He was a positive 22. The next best person out of both teams was Snacks on VP with a positive 4. So let that sink in and just realize how much Jay Kim carried. Not saying that that's the only reason they won, because G2, I felt like, was just playing out of their minds.
Fox was having some pretty good games himself. He was pretty dominant with the op throughout the entire tournament.
Right, and I feel like with Virtus Pro going out when they did in the quarterfinals, because it's Virtus Pro and the expectations they have on them, I vote Virtus Pro for my most disappointing tournament.
If you were to ask for a clear favorite to win the tournament before it started, everybody pretty much pointed to VP.
I mean, they made it to the best of top two. I mean,
yeah, they made it to best of eight, but I mean, that's a failure as far as Virtus Pro is concerned.
And that's why, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, it's all relative to the team, but with Virtus Pro going and failing in quarterfinals to G2, it's not, yeah, Fnatic lost in quarterfinals, but they lost to Envious, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
Fnatic?
Yeah. They lost to Envious in the quarterfinals. So, okay, yeah, you lost in quarterfinals, Fnatic, but you also lost to the team that won it all.
That ended up winning, yeah.
VP lost to G2, which, yeah, they were playing amazing, but it's G2 against VP. VP should have been able to figure out a way to at least take a map.
Against G2, yeah. Yeah.
So, yes, Titan had a very disappointing tournament in the eyes of their situation. But as far as expectation goes, I wasn't expecting Titan to make it out of groups to begin with. I was expecting VP to at least make semis.
I had him down as my pick for the winner.
And definitely not. Yeah. And not get 2-0'd in quarters. So, there's that. And then G2 moved on, obviously, from quarters to the semifinals, where they did lose to Envious 2-1. The 2-1 score does not do that justice at all, though. When you figure out on the second map on Inferno, it went to triple overtime, where it had to take Envious winning 25-21 to take it home.
Wow, and the CT T halves in regulation were completely split down the middle, too. You had Envious and G2 both taking 9 on T and 6 on CT, so it was like a perfect split right down the middle as far as games go. And then, 10-6 in overtime for Envious. That was an impressive game.
And I think, obviously, when I was watching overtime, when I was watching that match, I thought if G2 does not finish this out in overtime, if they don't take out Envious now, they're going to lose the next map. Just the way Envious was starting to pick up control and everything there, G2 had to pull out some crazy stops in that one to even continue overtime. So, because even there on the third map, Cash, Envious ended up dominating 16-7. I don't know if that was a mental thing. I mean, after a triple overtime, I would have to imagine you were just mentally exhausted.
I was about to say the same thing. Like, especially when you're overperforming the way you are throughout the entire tournament, that's got to be taxing to like have to go through that stress for that many rounds.
And even then, you have Envious, who did all of that plus had to go play in the finals a little later in the day against Navi, which, yeah, they ended up beating Navi 2-0, which is kind of anticlimactic for when you think of how unpredictable and how crazy the whole tournament's been. But really, I would say after the quarterfinals, it really became Envious' tournament to lose.
You know, I was kind of looking at the score lines for the finals. And if you take a look at like the players for Na'Vi competing against Envious, when they lost 16-14 on Train, you had Seized and Guardian. I mean, Seized went 32-19 on Train. He went pretty ham on there, and you had Guardian going 24-12. But then you go down to Cobblestone in the second game, and neither one of them are. I mean, Guardian went 16-17, and Seized went 9-18. Like, that's a pretty hefty swing from performing, and like that's why you were close in 16-14 to just kind of falling off the map there, and then that's why you lost 5-16 on map 2.
Right, and that's what. It was like everyone was so hyped up because of all the overtimes and everything, and then Envious just stomped on them in the finals for when it's all said and done. Overall, though, I would say, I mean, equipment issues aside, the production level as far as the tournament goes, I felt was t- top notch with PGN supplying the power there.
PGL.
Or PGL.
Yeah.
PGN's us.
They've got some, they have some very impressive, I mean, we've talked about it on the show before, production value as far as like transitions and stat layer overlays and stuff like that. It's very impressive.
For the record, Richard Lewis, Thorin, all of them don't have anything to do with the production value. Just want to get that out from someone who works in the media outlet. Hosts don't have anything to do with production value. They might throw in their 2 cents. It's the people behind the scenes you don't see. So give credit to them while a little golf clap to the hosts. I stand up for producers everywhere. But speaking of Richard Lewis, I felt like he did a really good job as a host and less of an analyst.
He's a pretty good host. He has enough knowledge to kind of drop a few lines here and there to make it interesting. I think he did a much better job this time of keeping the conversation moving. There's been other tournaments that I've watched with him really hosting where it just like, yeah.
Him and Thorin, man, they could feed off each other and just take conversations to a whole nother level where you're like, what are we talking about? Why is this one giant? I felt like a lot of other ones were just one giant inside joke between the two of them.
It is. I mean, it's inside joke between those two and then the people that have been following them on Twitter for 8 years.
Right. Other than that, though, I felt like they were able to reel it in a little bit on this.
Yeah,
and collusion. And
there were some moments, especially caused by Thorin, that, I mean, I'm happy to say that esports is small enough and kind of a niche enough product right now that we can watch that and be like, haha, that's funny. But after a while, that's not going to fly.
Definitely. Once they start making that TV actual network money.
Yeah.
I feel like they're going to have some like, hey, you can't call people retarded
on a national broadcast. Or
can't happen. Sorry.
I mean, there was a moment where they were making jokes about people dropping the soap. I think it was Navi and Envious. I'm pretty sure where Thorin said Envious was going to get in that ass. And it's like,
it's all fun and games until you're on network TV.
Yeah.
And then you have the public to answer to. Yeah. The audience might find it funny. Your bosses will not. So.
Yeah. When they start fielding all those emails from
angry, angry spectators saying, mothers. My child is watching this. So there's that. I did remember my Cloud9 thought, and I want to bring that up before we head out to the micro and shut this piece down. At what point, and it's not as black and white as this reference, okay? So in football, you really have the quarterback, you have the offense, let's say, and then you have the play callers. Typically, when a team is struggling, fans tend to migrate to one or the other. It's the offense's fault, or it's the play caller's fault. It could be both, you know, if your team's bad enough like the Lions. But typically, at the start, that's where those arguments branch off. I feel like you can somewhat compare that with Cloud9 right now, where I feel like the talent's there. I know Shroud struggled here. I felt like he was the one complaining most about equipment issues and changing his screen resolution, and he even said he's going to start practicing on a few different resolutions just in the event that this happens. He doesn't have to switch up mid-match, because that's what he did during a timeout.
Like, yeah,
they were switching resolutions in mid-timeout.
Yeah, I saw the tweet about that as well.
Right, so you have that there. But at what point then do we start blaming the players, or do we start blaming the strategy? I know, you know, Sean Garris is in general their strat caller, which I get it that, it, you know, I've talked about this with other friends where they're like, yeah, but if you look, it's not the strategies that are bad. It's not landing their shots when trying to execute those strategies, which I can totally agree with if they had any results getting out of groups.
I've already kind of talked about this and have written about it. I really think replacing one player on that team will put them back up where they were at.
And I guess that's for other people to make that decision on who, because when I watch them, one match it's Freakazoid, one match it's Shroud, the other one you're like, Sean Garris really doesn't make that much of a noise, but if he is the heart and soul of calling strats, maybe they need to just keep the team and try somebody new. Maybe move him in that coaching role like the rumor was and then move someone else in.
That comes up every time they fall out of groups. Yeah, moving him back to a coach. In my opinion, I really do think Freakazoid is kind of the weakest link. And hear me out. He's the entry fragger, so I know his kills and things like that aren't always going to be the best. But he's also the person that sets the tones for the matches. Like, if he goes in and dies and doesn't get any like relevant information like you're supposed to as an entry fragger, it doesn't matter what strategy you're going to have. You're down a guy and you have no idea what's happening on the map. I really think he's kind of like the linchpin for the performance of the team, and he's not bad, he's just inconsistent.
Right, and I, just like how you gave NIP this tournament as their last chance, which, where do you stand on now? There's no way you can still look at me today and say NIP is breaking up.
They did perform really well.
No way. They almost made the finals.
They did make the semifinals. The tweets and rumors on NIP from their manager saying they were going to play out their contracts, I imagine they'll be sticking around the rest of the year.
Yes. Well, they'll for sure end up there, and I think they'll return. I think this tournament rebirthed the ninjas in pajamas magic that everyone...
NIP magic?
Yeah, they got on that NIP magic just a little bit more to save them all contract issues there. But similar to how you gave them one more shot and they were like, oh my God, we need to perform because Brandon gave us one more shot, I'm giving Cloud9 one more shot at San Jose. I understand the San Jose roster is stacked for how... there's only, what, 8 teams, and the teams there are stacked right now. But, man, that's home turf. You have to show up.
Yeah, the travel cannot be an excuse when all you're going to is San Jose.
It has to do something for them, and that's really honestly my last chance to... I will always be a Cloud9 fan, but as far as that roster goes, after that, that's when you start calling for heads. I'd say after San Jose, if they even perform the way they did, like I said, it's not so much their finishing spot, it's their performance, it's their lack of looking like they care.
Like, that's fair enough. Like, if they're not even into it, yeah,
they're happy with being at the tournament,
and that goes back to competition of any kind.
Yep, they're happy with nothing getting his player profile, which were pretty awesome, by the way.
Yeah, so I went through DreamHack's Flickr. The cameraman from DreamHack was in love with nothing. There's seriously like 80 pictures of just him.
I mean, he's a funny guy. He was definitely on something during the Fnatic match. That's when he like tickled JW's stomach. It was really an awkward moment on stage for everyone, but you know, maybe they snuck in some of that Adderall. It wasn't an ESL tournament, so they're not testing for drugs there. So there it is for Kalouge. That's kind of the recap there. Let's jump into the micro if you want to kind of send this one home.
Yeah, real quick. Gfinity, who you know is hosting the Gfinity Cups, reported their first fiscal year earnings to the tune of a negative $5,551,000.
What happened to this esports?
So, I mean,
billion-dollar industry
in the world of investments, especially for a new company, you're not really expected to make a profit for the first couple of years because you're building a product. You're, you know, eating a lot of marketing and all. Of course. But $5.5 million.
That's pretty rough, considering.
Like, and I know they built a dedicated esports arena.
Okay. Okay.
They are hosting the tournaments.
Where did they build that at?
You know, I'm not sure. Where
no
they built
one
that
knows.
Out.
We may never have that information.
They did build it. I have it here somewhere.
So anyway, while you look for that.
Oh, United Kingdom.
Okay. Oh,
there you go.
Not a bad location. It's better than Kalouge, where I guess the crowd sizes were kind of meh.
Well, you watched the stream. Like, there's like 80 feet between the stage and the first chair.
I don't blame that, though, on the crowd size. I blame that on goofy chair setup.
Yeah.
I mean, I do agree where...
Was in I don't exactly remember, was like the players lounge area between the stage and the fans.
I don't remember. I thought it was like in the middle of the seats of the fans. Either way, yeah, you had the stages, then like fold out chairs in front of them. There was just a lot of dead space that they should have really filled up with something. Whether that was just lights or little interview stages, I don't know, but they should have felt it with something because it looked awkward. But apparently somewhere in Romania, I think maybe even in Cluj, there was some nightclub disaster that happened where a lot of people died. So some guy on Reddit said, well, the city was in mourning and everyone was like, yeah, but what does that have anything to do with a Counter-Strike tournament?
That happened on like day three or something like that of the tournament too.
Well, and also it's not like it wasn't a terrorist attack. It was a nightclub fire. Yeah, it's sad, but if me and you were planning on going somewhere and a fire happened in Fort Worth, would we be like, oh,
can't go,
man, I can't do this right now.
So in other news of ESL trying to take over the esports world, with all their exclusivity contracts and leagues and all that.
Will they ever stop?
They are partnering with Activision to create the Call of Duty World League. So previously, Call of Duty only hosted or was only involved in the Call of Duty Championship, which was the $1 million grand tournament. Now they're trying to branch out and create an entire league similar to something like Riot has going for the LCS.
So
and
is this partnered tied with in
ESL?
This is tied in then to the recent announcement of Activision's making their own league.
Right. So Activision Blizzard recently hired the MLG president and the old ESPN CEO to create the esports division, and now they're partnering with ESL to like put on the tournaments. So like Call of Duty's going big into esports right now. Activision's going all in.
It might not be big right now as far as where it's at, but I'll tell you what, if Activision, and they would be very smart to do this and not exclusively host their stuff on MLG, if they move to Twitch, I promise you, I would watch more than what I watch now for Call of Duty, and that is none at all.
I would watch more. Call of Duty seems interesting enough to watch. I mean, I'm not sure of its competitive merits as far as skill overcoming luck, but it'd be entertaining to watch. There's exciting stuff that happens. So
I agree. So I think I don't see any downsides to this. I think that it's
my only concern. Good for the sport. My only concern is that it's with ESL. That's my only concern, but
Why is that a concern though? Convinced. What has ESL done? This is what I don't get with ESL. What has ESL done to warrant all the hate of we can't have them controlling everything?
Well, there was the whole payout issue a couple years back when they ran out of money and just completely stopped paying out tournaments.
What
and
tournament got host like, hasn't ran out of money now?
Yeah,
Come on.
That's esports.
That's just part of being professional.
But the issue with ESL is what they did is like instead and like they hosted a tournament, had these winners and didn't pay them. And then because StarCraft became such a big game at that moment, they said, well, sorry, we can't pay you because we have to put on this StarCraft 2 tournament. And like that's kind of where it gets a little sketchy. Like, hey, we're not going to pay you because we want to keep lining our pockets with money with this new game and we have to pay to put it on. And the exclusivity thing like kind of rubs people the wrong way just because they're trying to lock down teams. We've talked about it. It has its pros and cons.
Yeah, you can make a list of pros and cons. If it's done correctly, I would welcome it.
But ESL partnering now with Activision to put on Call of Duty, I mean, you have arguably the biggest console shooter now.
Yeah,
you have the biggest PC shooter. I mean, the only reason you don't have Dota or LCS is because, you know, they've already got people taking care of all their stuff.
Right. I'm going to love to see where this one goes as far as being one of the first exclusive leagues other than League of Legends itself. So
right.
We'll see where that one goes. My contribution to the micro is San Jose, San Jose IEM.
IEM.
Tournament here coming out up here in just a few weeks, I think. If I really did my research, I would have looked at the starting date before this, but I didn't. But anyways, so that last spot's going to be filled either by G2 or possibly Fnatic if, for whatever reason, G2 doesn't want to go. The way that they worded who would take that final spot at San Jose was the best placing non-invite team at DreamHack Cluj would go to San Jose IEM for the taking up that last spot, which is G2. And then the second one is Fnatic. So I'm assuming we're sticking with those rules, and if I read them correctly, it's going to be G2, and if they, for whatever reason, say no, they'll say Fnatic.
And for you listeners at home, if you are getting your tournament dates from us, You're way behind, but it's actually November 21st and 22nd is IEM.
Okay, so here just about 20 days or so from recording this. Weeks. All right. Also, EVO 2016's dates were announced. The only detail so far, obviously it's going to be in Las Vegas like it is every year. July 15th through the 17th, 2016. Oh, buddy. I cannot wait. I want to go.
To Vegas?
I want to go. I want to go to EVO.
It could be anywhere.
Anywhere. I want to go to EVO. Man, watching those streams, the hype is so unreal. I mean, we've played the audio from from Super Smash on MLG and everything. It is that level of hype for an entire weekend of just non-stop fighting game action, and it's awesome. And it's in Vegas, so I mean, even then,
esport betting world is about to blow up.
How can you go wrong? I mean, it's always in Vegas, but how can you go wrong? So they don't know where it's yet, though. I think last year was at the Palazzo, if that's a casino thing over there.
I've never been to Vegas. Yeah, gambling's not my thing,
but I will go. Man, if we gotta just get this show big, that's really what it boils down to. So I can justify going to Vegas. Without the misses there. And we mentioned this, I think it was last week we mentioned where Dignitas, their B team for League of Legends, actually qualified for the season.
It's their European team qualified.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Either way, Dignitas had two teams qualify underneath their branch, and you can't have that. So they put one of them up for sale, and that has now been sold. So follow esports, purchase Dignitas. Their LCS team for upwards to 500,000. So there's been conflicting reports.
Yeah, there's two things on that. One, the story that I read said at least $1 million. Okay. And I was like, wow, 500,000, much easier to swallow. Two, nobody knows where Follow Esports got that money from. Like, it's a small website that does nothing but show like tournament trackers.
They have a donation button on their website.
Yeah.
You know who has a donation button on their website? We have a donation button on our website, and we don't have any money to pay for a team, let alone
$500,000
for that. So,
the whole esports, especially esports subreddit, kind of blew up. Like, all right, what's up? Where'd you get the money from?
Some Russian mafia or something? Yeah, that's. I don't understand that one either. Do you have anything else for the micro, sir?
No, that's it. Let's sign off.
All right, excellent. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening to The Center Ring, also known as TCR. This was episode 7 that is now officially in the books. Lots of Kluge talk. But you can't have it. You can't have too much Counter-Strike talk after a major like that. Even if the majors are very random and no order to when a major actually is, and it's all up to Valve. But hey.
Hint, Valve, hint.
We'll
hint.
Save that rant for another episode that makes no effing sense what esports does. Again, my name is Tim. The gentleman across the table from me is Brandon. You can follow me on Twitter at what is my Twitter? At Pirate Mushroom.
You went out of order.
Yeah, this is what happens when I don't have a script. You are at?
At BrandPGN.
And of course, the show is at The Center Ring. Follow us there for any of the latest show info or anything like that. As well, we would like to remind you to always check out our website, pgn.tv. You can find many articles there from Justin. He is our League of Sports guru on that. So,
and then our shows, League of Legends. And our shows, pgn.tv/TCR.
Of course.
All the episodes are there.
Check out all the episodes. We want to thank again Matt Rutledge for taking the time out of his week earlier in the week to talk to us. About mastery.gg. Fascinating stuff there. Again, follow us on Twitter at The Center Ring for all the latest show intro. As far as that goes, info. Man, I cannot talk tonight. Latest show info, not intro.
Rough night.
It's time to go home, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to The Center Ring. We will be back next Tuesday in a 1 week, depending on when you're listening to this episode. Until then, keep it easy.